Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 13, Canto 5, Chapter 10. Unmata mata jadavat svasamstam gatasya me vira chikik chikitsatena artakiryan bhavata shikshitena Stabdha pramatasya cha pishta peshaha Unmata mata jadavat svasangstam Gatasya me vira chikitsatena Krishna Atakiran bhavata shikshitena Stabda pramatasya cha pishta peshaha Unmata madness. Mata a drunkard. Jadavat like a dunce. Sva sangstam situation in my original constitutional position. Gatasya of one who has obtained. Me of me. Vira, O king. Chikitsitena by your chastisement. Artaha the meaning or purpose. Kyan, what? Bhavata, by you. Shikshitena, by being instructed. Stabdha, dull. Pramatasya, of a crazy man. Cha, also. Pishtapeshaha, like grinding flour. Translation, my dear king, you have said, you rascal, you dull, crazy fellow, I'm going to chastise you and then you will come to your senses. In this regard, let me say that although I live like a dull, deaf, and dumb man, I'm actually a self-realized person. What will you gain by punishing me? If your calculation is true, and I am a madman, then your punishment will be like beating a dead horse. There will be no effect. When a madman is punished, he is not cured of his madness. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This is the last verse, by the way, of Judd Barrett speaking. Everyone in this material world is working like a madman under certain impressions falsely acquired in the material condition. For example, a thief who knows that stealing is not good and who knows that it is followed by punishment, with punishment, by a king or by God, who has seen that thieves are arrested and punished by the police, nonetheless steals again and again. He is obsessed with the idea that by stealing he will be happy. This is a sign of madness. Despite repeated punishment, the thief cannot give up his stealing habit, therefore the punishment is useless. Well, many times Prabhupada would say, you can tell the quality of a person when they speak. They may act certain ways, but when they speak, you can understand the person. A fool is revealed when they speak, and an enlightened person is revealed when they speak. So this is the last of his verses, and he's now explicitly saying, I'm a self-realized soul, Prabhu, and my dear King Veera, so what good will you accomplish by punishing me? That part is very clear. And of course, once the king has heard him speak, he's in the opposite mood than chastising and punishing. He's profusely apologetic and falls at Jad Bharat's feet and so forth. But the other is, and if in fact I am what you think I am, then what will be gained like beating a dead horse? For some reason, Prabhupada doesn't include in the translation or in the purport anything about this pishta peshaha, grinding flour. He instead uses the beating a dead horse. I guess, like, what's the use of grinding flour when it's already ground? What's to be gained? Beating a dead horse. The horse is dead. So, in two things, in Vedic culture, it is the duty of a king to punish a wrongdoer, whether that wrongdoer is crazy or not. Or in modern society, if somebody's a mad person and they do mad things, at least they're to be restrained. You could say that restraint is a punishment. A reckless murderer, thief, or whatever, a wrongdoer is apprehended by agents of the government and restrained, at least for some time, and then released to go back and do the same things commensurate with the crime. So in one sense it's useless. It doesn't mean that restraint shouldn't be done or punishment shouldn't be done if someone's a reckless wrongdoer. And second point is similarly the law of karma. In general, people are mad, according to the Bhagavatam, because they're accepting what they are not to be who they are, or who they are not to be who they are, and acting accordingly, and this is madness. In this fifth canto, earlier, chapter 5, Maharaj Rishabhdev speaks this to his sons. So then material nature is wrong, to have the law of karma where people who are mad are punished by the law of karma, because it's not going to do anything anyways. So it's not, with those two examples, three examples, a king, modern government, and material creation. It's not that they're wrongdoers who are mad, you don't restrain them, or you don't do anything that checks their behavior. It may not correct their madness, but it can restrain their behavior. And the whole purpose in creation, the whole purpose of the unwanted misery, the kleshas of threefold kleshas, they're there to induce the living entity to not give up the madness, to give up the wrong conception of life, and turn at least to looking for an alternative, and then Krishna gives alternatives. But at least the instruction that Jad Bharat is offering to the king, what will you gain? You're saying, I'll punish you and then you'll come to your senses. But it's not come to your senses by punishing. It's restraining
And then maybe, oh, I better behave not like that. But as Prabhupada is pointing out, for example, thieves continue to steal. And wrongdoing has its tendency to repeat itself and repeat itself and repeat itself. In other words, another solution is needed. The purification solution is needed. Having people live by codes of dharma is needed. But what's going to get people that are adharmic to live by codes of dharma? If there wasn't the impetus of misery following adharma, why would they have impetus to follow dharma? So there's a purpose behind the punishment by material nature or a king or someone. Now, the punishment, to say, like, anyone that has authority over another, it's the same list as Chanakya Pandit or the Bhagavatam. That if you're a teacher and you have students, or if you're a parent, you have children, or you're a head of state and you have citizens, or you're a guru and you have disciples, or any situation where there's a position of strength in relation to another who is looking up to that person who is of position of strength. Correction in those relationships has its place. If there's no correction, how can go forward? Just like Prabhupada said, disciple comes from the word discipline. Without discipline, how can there be a spiritual master-disciple relationship? It's non-real. It's nominal only. I'm a disciple, but I do what I like. That's not a disciple. So discipline is necessary, and discipline may sometimes look like this, just like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, that a father may sometimes, this is commentary to Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.8, the Tattena Kampam Silsamik Shimano verse. If someone does something wrong, there may be some admonishment that comes from the Supreme Lord. So his commentary is just like, two examples, just like a father may sometimes give to his son a sweetmeat, and sometimes he gives him bitter Nimba juice. Those of you from America don't know about Nimba juice, but it's bitter. Neem, bitter. So the son may think, oh, why are you giving me bitter Nimba juice? Because it's medicinally beneficial. The father is not mad or mean by giving Nimba juice instead of a sweetmeat. And second example he gives is sometimes the father will embrace his son, and sometimes the father will scold his son. Oh, why are you being mean? So it's not being mean, it's the loving father helping the son go in a good direction instead of an unwholesome, unbeneficial direction. That's the loving father, and then there's the loving Lord. And so sometimes. And those who are intelligent can understand, and that's just one last thing, and I'm going to end class early. The one that indication that Prabhupada has given, very simple, there's different levels of intelligence, and what he's describing in the purport is the fourth class intelligent. So the first class intelligent is just by hearing, one can understand, that's the brahmana, and then one does. First class intelligent. Second class intelligent. One hears, one doesn't understand, but one sees that you steal, and there's consequences that are undesirable. So that second class intelligent, I see, so I won't steal. Third class intelligent, I hear, I see, but I still go ahead anyways and I steal. And then I suffer, and then I can learn I don't steal anymore because I don't want to suffer. And the fourth class is intelligent, is go through all those things and when it continues. Fourth class intelligent. That's you're purchasing misery with choices that lead to those kinds of suffering. That's just, it's part of material nature. Just even as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, material nature is designed in such a way it gives dukkha. The prison house is designed to give dukkha. You don't create a prison house where it's like fun. It's meant to be not fun. So that you learn, I don't do the crime again because I don't want the prison. It's just restraining behavior without taking away the desire to do the bad behavior. Just checking the bad behavior. So the higher principle, obviously, is cleansing the desire. And the cleansing of the desire, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, takes place down to the root of a desire for anything other than Krishna comes from bhakti. Bhakti has that power. So even better than the first class intelligent person is the Vaishnava. Better than the Brahmana is the Vaishnava. Because the Vaishnava takes shelter of Krishna. Even if the Vaishnava doesn't understand what's going to happen when I take shelter of Krishna, the desire for other than Krishna is uprooted. One in the beginning may not understand that. But taking shelter of, like Dhruva, taking shelter of bhakti to the Supreme Lord has that potency. The desire for other than the Supreme Lord is uprooted. And that's what the Bhagavatam is meant to take us to. It's designed that way. It's crafted and presented by Vyasadeva in that way. It's the essence of all the Vedas. Just like the question in the very beginning, Canto 1, Chapter 1, what's the essence of all the Vedas? The word that's used in that question is manda. Here it's mata, mad, crazy, and unmata, drunkard, madness. There's another word, stabda, dull, pramatasya, mata again, pramatasya, very crazy. So in this age, people are influenced by the material energy, that the goal of life is lost, and so they become mad and pursue actively misery. Mad. And then do it again, and do it again, and do it again, and do it again, and do it again. Experience the misery and do it again. And do it again, and do it again, and do it again. Just maybe a little differently next time. It's madness. So because people in this age are manda and mata, the question, chapter one, is people aren't going to go through all the Vedas that tell us what's the alternative. Can you summarize the essence of all the Vedas? And the summary essence of all the Vedas is bhakti. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha. The essence. Engage in devotional service to Krishna, Vasudeva, Krishna. That's the essence. Why? It takes away the root of that madness and the root of the craziness and the root of the misfortune. How? Turning attention again to Krishna. Directly, explicitly, again and again, and then warnings that if you don't, here's the consequences. You get deluded by the material energy and you stay birth after birth in the place of madness, in the prison house. Taking something other as the goal. Just a little sharing from yesterday. Southern Illinois University. That girl that came forward and asked, you know, so many questions. She said one of these standard things that, you know, all religions are the same. I was born in such and such, and then I started looking around and I looked at this and that and the other thing and the other thing, and I've come to the conclusion they're actually saying the same thing. She didn't like ask it as a question, she just said, that's my conclusion. So I said, kind of, but not exactly. I said, you know what a Venn diagram is? Yeah, yeah. So a Venn diagram, here's two circles, and you, when the circles overlap, there's some things that overlap. And the things that overlap are these values. And like, let's just say compassion. Buddhism says, Christianity says, Tai Chi says, and you know all the other things that she's looked into, they say compassion. So that's a quality that's a human quality. You should be compassionate, and that which is resting upon is a spiritual core. So now let's take a look at the spiritual core, not just the value. And just a little sharing. You know, when you're in situations like this, something that may be helpful, to, depending upon the person. What's the goal of Buddhism? What's the goal of Christianity? And what's the goal of Bhagavad Gita? So, with, you know, a little more elaborately, but minus the elaboration, the goal of Buddhism that says compassion, kindness to other beings, ahimsa, nonviolence, what's the goal? Nothingness. Over here, what's the goal of following the codes of virtue and value that you still have, although you're looking around, so you haven't rejected your the upbringing that you have? You're carrying it with you. You're looking around. So what's the goal in Christianity? Heaven. Now, what's heaven? Now let's go over here to the Vedic version. He writes in Bhagavad Gita more elaborately in other parts of the Vedas. Heaven is part of the material creation. And then above heaven, there's four other planetary systems within material creation, and they're all created and destroyed. I just shared with them when I was little. I asked, what's it like in heaven? And nobody knew. So what to speak of the difference between heaven and Vaikuntha, the kingdom of God? You know, in Christianity, it's kind of used interchangeably. There's no distinction at all. So one is nothingness, another is heaven, and another is Vaikuntha. So they share values which sound the same, and, you know, you should go there and be a virtuous person. Here's the standards of virtue. But what's the goal of following virtue? Well, many people think it's you do punya so you can, this is universal, according to Bhagavad Gita and any discussions that I've had with others to see if it's in fact what they believe in. Virtue is so you can get, you can be a pious person, and the purpose of piety is so you can get pious credits so that you can prosper, so that you can enjoy in this life, and then you go to the good place after this life, and you can enjoy even more. That's the purpose of following virtue. I mean, there's atheists or agnostics that don't hold that's where you go. You should just do it because you should just do it. That's the agnostic view. It's just the way to live, is be virtuous. You know, this one, that one. So where's the goal of being virtuous? Well, you have to live a happier life. It's nicer to be in a place where people follow virtue. So, you know, be a follow virtue person to help make the place a nice place. Then it's about your own enjoyment. Not for some higher purpose, but your own enjoyment. It's more enjoyable to be nice, to be virtuous, than otherwise. Anyway, and then what's the standard of virtue? Well, It changes over time because culture changes over time, and the modes of nature change over time, and things that influence people change over time. And so what's virtue changes all the time. There's no standard. It's vox populi. It changes. And then it goes this way, and then it goes that way, and it goes all over the place. What's to be done? What's not to be done? It's all over the place. So understanding the goal, where the Bhagavatam, all these nice teachings of Jed Bhara to Rishabhdev, and you know, to us also, where is it meant to take us? This discrimination between matter and spirit, and not misidentifying in the category of matter. Although we may act according to the category of matter which we're at in present. Man and woman, for example, we act in an appropriate manner according to the designation, although we know that's not who we are. Because it's meant for, it helps the organization of society to be conducive for spiritual elevation. That's why we follow it. We don't transgress it because it disturbs that higher purpose. So it's very important to know the higher purpose behind this dialogue. Specifically with Maharaj Rahugana, and also very important for us. Why is all of this here, all this servant master talk? How is it relevant to our achieving the goal of life? So it's important to keep that core as we're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and then we can receive instructions about what's inside and how to live our lives. We may need to adjust some things that are inside so that we know how to lead our lives. And then we can become of Vaishnava intelligence rather than the other four kinds. Okay, so any comments or discussion? We have two personalities here who are having a hard time staying awake. Yes.
We should forget our higher purpose.
We should not forget our higher purpose. But I'm thinking these days that reality for me is that my shelter, my needs still go towards material. I close there, and that's the foundation of kind of my life. And I'm in a process to have a relationship with Krishna, to have faith in Krishna, and dependence that is only in progress. But in between, when the crisis and identification, you know, that crushed, it seems like there's no foundation. I'm looking towards Krishna as a loving father or approaching
him.
It just seems like a big challenge.
Why? Well, if the forces, this is a dialogue just to get clarity on the question. It's not the answer yet. There's two forces. There's the core spiritual, and there's the other, whatever, you know, varieties of other. And those other, during a certain stretch of time, the others seem to be more active than at other times when they're less active. It doesn't change the core, but sometimes and sometimes. So now, and when things move in that direction, the other than relationship with Krishna direction, it's very powerful, and the bottom falls out. What to do when the bottom falls out? That's your question. In my association, this is a joke. In my association with Devamrita Maharaj, he often answers things in terms of sports analogies. So the sport analogy is drop back 10 and punt. That maybe doesn't mean anything to you. It's a football term. It's fourth down and 10. What do? You drop back 10 and punt. So you step back and you look at yourself. There's this and there's that. So when things are moving in that direction, I have the tendency to forget this. So when you step back, you're in a reflective mode, mode of goodness. You looking inside and say, now if things may move so fast in the other direction, it appears that the bottom falls out. Step into the mode of goodness, and the bottom is there. It's just this other force is acting very strongly and eclipsing, at least to some degree. So if one can step in the mode of goodness to a degree, reflect on what's happening here, that's the mode of goodness approach to life and circumstances of life. This is there, and the other is very strong. Then, so it's recognizing the core is there, and it's just the other is so strong, it's hard for me to access. It's not that I can't. Prabhupada said can't is a word in the Fool's Dictionary. It's, this is so strong, it's very difficult to access that core. Now, what to do? So, before you go to the what to do, do the reflecting. Go to the mode of goodness space. What's happening here? There's these forces acting in my life. As I'm speaking to you and answering this question, I'm thinking of three other people that I'm having dialogue with, helping to train and guide them, and their core is fantastic. And there's other forces acting in their life. Same message, different, you know, personalities and different forces and different dynamics altogether. That same principle. So now, one really, really wonderful answer to what to do is, send me a little note and I'll forward to you the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Prabhupada's, well, it's the BBT commentary of Krishna's giving the answer to Uddhava, what to do when those other forces are operating. And the tendency to forget Krishna is prevailing. In essence, his Krishna's instruction to Uddhava is, you know, where we are and what we know, and we're somewhere moving, you know, kind of like a sine curve up and down in between what we know and where we are. Krishna's instruction says, having faith, specifically, as far as I can recall, faith in the process of hearing about me, because of having that faith in the process of hearing about me, attraction to me has awakened. And these other forces are acting where there's attraction for other things besides me. And one who has attraction for me because of their faith in the process of hearing knows that these others are sources of misery, but they're there. So that's the acknowledgement of where I am and acknowledgement of my core and where I want to be. And then I may act on those other things knowing they're going to bring misery, but it will not budge my faith in the core with confidence that by taking shelter, continuing to take shelter of the core, although I may have to suffer those other things and the force of those other things acting in my life, the mercy of Krishna is going to come in my life through this primary activity of hearing about Krishna, in Krishna speaking, hearing about me. So I carry on with my devotional service as best I can given the circumstance, without losing that faith. even while acting on these other things, knowing it's going to bring misery. And so there's, you know, it's a little bit, there's a little bit of a brake pedal on acting on these other things, and the bottom doesn't fall out. Now that works to the degree that there's, going back to the first part of what he says, one who has faith in me due to their faith in the hearing about me, that's a big, big, big if, and a big factor, big precondition. And that's part of the sine curve when, you know, those other forces, just by the movements of time, because time moves matter in the configuration of matter, so inside there's impressions, sankskaras. You know, there's good ones and there's bad ones. And when time moves the bad ones, and, you know, the undesirable stuff starts to rise, I can see where it's coming from. It's time moving matter, and it's not me. That's knowledge leads to detachment. But my shelter's over here, but here I go, because I'm still with some affinity for matter. Now, bhakti moves in stages or levels. So the first level is indicated in chapter 2. When those things come, the instruction of Krishna is tatiksha. Tatiksha means tolerate. Now sometimes it's hard to tolerate. It's like, whoa. So, but the instruction doesn't change. It's you tolerate. And tolerate, in one sense, it means withdraw consciousness from there and place consciousness here. Well, when this is moving really fast and hard and strong, it's hard to withdraw because I'm fearful, in the language of the Bhagavatam. Dutiya abhinivesh is, abhinivesh means absorption in dutiya, something other than Krishna. These sangskaras that are being moved by time and circumstance, and here I go. And on the feeling level, it's very strong. And the intelligence kind of takes a back seat. And Krishna seems to be not there. Although, with power of discrimination, I know what's going on. I know where it's taking me. And here I go. So the shelter for in the beginning level is, as far as possible, withdraw consciousness from there and invest consciousness over there. Withdraw consciousness from asat and invest consciousness in sat. And by one's regularly hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, we hear it again and again and again and again, and it gradually goes in. And that gives us the power of, gives us buddhi, the power of discrimination, to not go there, the brake pedal, and the steering mechanism to go there instead. Spiritual strength, to not go there and go here instead. It's gradual. So it starts with you tolerate, you don't invest consciousness in that because you know it's not me, it's temporary, and it's due to stuff. It's not where I want to go. It's not me. It's not my goal of life. That those commitments to Krishna that come from proper hearing and chanting give strength. And gradually. So then it goes to another level and another level and another level. Another level mentioned in Bhagavad Gita is not just you tolerate, but you become indifferent to gradually. It's there. But I'm, you know, indifferent. I don't have to yield to anger if someone has an anger problem, or I don't have to yield to lust if someone has a lust problem. I don't have to yield to greed. I don't have to yield to pride. I don't have to yield to those things. I know they may be active, other forces besides this one, due to my past and all those other things back there, and time is moving them, and here we go for the ride. But a devotee doesn't have to go for the ride. He can become indifferent to those forces on the strength of bhakti. Because what's more important to me in my life and my trajectory of where I want to be and who I really am, what's really important to me, is stronger than that one. So I not just tolerate it, but I become indifferent to it progressively. And then at a higher level is I'm not unable to recognize, but the happiness is so full. Just like, let's say, a great personality may have a malady. It's not that they're unaware of the malady, the pain in their foot or whatever it is, but their consciousness is somewhere else. So they may deal with the pain in their foot or whatever the thing is, but their consciousness is somewhere else. That's so there's levels. But in the beginning, just listen to the recording again. Go to this pause space. And if you practice it, it becomes second nature. Practice and practice and practice, and you go to this space where I'm reflecting. I'm not just reacting to the trigger that's over here that says whatever the samskara is and time is moving it. I go to the mode of goodness space. And I consider what's happening here. So that gives an opportunity for knowledge to rise and detachment following that knowledge. It's still moving, but there's knowledge and a bit of detachment. And then you can make some choices depending upon your spiritual development, the strength that you have and the spiritual intelligence that you have and other resources that you can reach out to and take strength beyond your own strength. And, you know, it's a battle with Maya. One of the phrases that I commonly use with teenagers that go through teenage stuff is war with Maya. They like, you know, the battle spirit. Becoming a devotee means you declare war on Maya. And Maya fights back. And there's this and there's that and there's the other thing. And it's a war on Maya. You move towards Krishna, Maya's not going to just let you go. Maya's going to come and get you. Stand and fight. War on Maya. The part of the Maya is stuff inside. It's not somebody else's Maya, and I'm like, good. It's the war on Maya inside. Be strong. Take courage. Krishna will help you. Bhagavad Gita. If we're standing alone, we're going to get smashed, crushed, powdered. If we have Krishna by our side, we have strength. We have intelligence. You know, fear disappears, or at least it fades, because Krishna is there. You know, like there was a discussion writing in the car yesterday. How can I have more trust in Krishna? Same kind of question, this particular part of the discussion, but by being situated in very strong practices of chanting and hearing, then clarity comes, purification comes, Krishna comes, strength comes, and the capacity then to make wise choices. Where do I take my shelter? To a place that's worthy of trust. And he's all powerful and he's all merciful. I'm not all powerful. And I'm a little scrambled when it comes to situations where other forces acting in my life rise. I get a little scrambled. But Krishna's not. So I'm going to hold his hand, take shelter of him, specifically in the form of hearing, and those dear associates of Krishna that are extending themselves to me out of their kindness and carrying Krishna's kindness into my life. I'm going to reach out for those person's hand and hold tightly. And fear dissipates or diminishes to some degree. And progressively, one becomes fearless because of Krishna's protection. The place that we're in is dangerous, because that doesn't change. But the sense of being protected, even in a dangerous place, starts to fill in. So at the hearing and chanting process, and the resources that Krishna has provided that give us spiritual clarity, spiritual strength, beyond our own strength. It starts with the holy name and Srimad Bhagavatam and the deity form. So, and with a prayerful mood, sincerely calling. And you know, then that core doesn't fall away. It's something you can easily connect with. Just reach out and easily connect with. There's this phrase in the Bhagavatam, taking a long time to answer the question. There's a phrase in the Bhagavatam, anatta and sanatta. And anatta means one who has no master, and sanatta means one who has a master. And the material condition of life is one doesn't recognize there's a master, or consistent with all the discussion in these Bhagavatam verses, there's illusory masters. And they don't provide protection and shelter. And that's a fearful condition, having no protection. But there is protection from the most qualified protector. And one who takes that position is protected. Have you heard me speak on this topic before? Remember that narration about a morning walk at a university in India, and there's a professor walking by with a little poodle, and you remember that one? Like that. Little poodle was this little guy. He was a meal for these street dogs. But because the professor was the protector of the poodle, he picked up the poodle, put the poodle under his arm, and these, you know, five dogs showing their teeth and growling and barking and bristling the hairs in the back of their neck and looking at each other and saying, let's eat them. The poodle was completely undisturbed because he's under his master's arm, and the master's showing the stick, and the dogs are looking at the stick, looking at each other, and went back and laid down. They stopped making their noise. And the poodle, his little tail is wagging, and he's licking the cheek of the professor. Sanatha. There's danger, and there's fearful conditions that awaken this, you know, adrenal system, and just fight or flight just takes over. And when that happens, you can't hear. It says fight or flight. But when there's sanatha, it's a whole other thing happens. That's the one of the assets of taking shelter of Krishna by the hearing process. And then there's this in-between stage, which is what your question was. So remind me, and I'll forward that text to you. We're at 9:15.
How can we increase
our desire to hear? Well, my thought is going to Prabhupada's answer to the question, how do you become sincere? And his answer was by being sincere. And the persons in the audience were kind of like, wait a minute, what kind of answer is that? And then his continued response was, everybody knows what is sincerity, so you cultivate sincerity. You cultivate eagerness to hear. Well, why? From just it's like Shikshastakam 3. After the glories of the holy name, 1 and 2, Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, I have no attraction. And then he supplies the answer to that problem, Shikshastakam 3. So cultivate Shikshastakam 3 while engaged in chanting and hearing. Cultivate those qualities that are human qualities, and they will help the eagerness to hear and chant in a sincere manner. So it is some effort in that direction. So then, why? Because of understanding Shikshastakam 1 and 2. But I'm not there because I'm so unfortunate. So then these other qualities will help power the sincere effort to become eager to hear. Not for information's sake, but for connecting with Krishna's sake. Restoring our forgotten, now dormant relationship with Krishna. Which, you know, goes back to her question. When other stuff starts to happen, that connection with Krishna just bottom falls out. So, but I want that. Don't depart from that. And it's part of, it's the core part of my nature. It's really important. If we want to advance in Krishna consciousness, to go beyond the struggle thing, to recognize the core thing. Who are we? And what is really, we're here because it's really important. There's so many things to do in this world. We're here because it's important to us. It has to do with our true nature. So from that position, cultivate Shikshastakam 3 for the rest of your life and wish to become more ardent in the process of hearing. And the last answer, look at the, it's towards the very end of Canto 1, Chapter 3, where Prabhupada gives, in order to be in rapt attention, one has to control the mind. In order to control the mind, one has to control the senses, and gives that sequence. And then he says, in this age it's very difficult, so somehow or other, try. But those are, there's some formula of how to come to the stage of rapt attention. Something else? We have a little bit of time. You want to take the microphone? Of course.
So, Maharaj, we have a lot of impressions on the mind.
Yes.
And also, we have a karma because of our past.
Yes.
These two categories is there. And on the other side, we have our swabhava and we have our desire. And from my understanding, these two is different. And these two, this on the other side is a cause for these two.
It's the same question as yesterday, it sounds like. Spiritual swabhava and material swabhava.
Actually, my question is different. What I'm trying to understand is, bhakti uproots all the unnecessary desires.
Bhakti does what?
Uproots.
Uproots, okay.
Uproots all the...
Well, the power is there to do so.
Yeah.
It may or may not, depending upon our submission to Krishna in a mood of devotion. But go ahead.
Yeah. So, and my question is like, the swabhava, whatever I have, like for the purpose of service or for the good purpose, if I want to change that swabhava, does bhakti helps me to change totally of my swabhava or by practicing Like that.
You lost me. You use some other terminology because okay. Swabhava has different applications.
Okay. You know, my nature is different and my desire is different.
The material nature and material desire. No, the spiritual nature, spiritual desire. Which one?
The spiritual.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because material is totally we are trying to take it out. So I'm talking...
At the same time, we're very strongly influenced by it.
Yeah.
So now?
So my question is, does my spiritual nature, whatever I don't have it, like...
Whatever I don't have it, my spiritual nature, it's already there. You have it. I'm looking at the premise of your question, and it's confusing me. So it's hard to answer.
Okay. You know, I want to do some service which I don't have that nature.
Well, you don't have that nature? Then
nature
why would you want to do that
or
service?
Or ability or knowledge, whatever is for that service needed. So if I want to carry out that thing, by practicing bhakti and by the mercy of Krishna, do I have that nature coming with me? I mean, get the nature to do carry out the service for the purpose?
Well, maybe. It depends on Krishna. Krishna is the source of everything, and he's the source of ability. So it's not my nature, nor is it my ability to do something, but I'd like to do that something. Supposing, for example, I'd like to sing in kirtan very nicely, and my voice sounds like a frog. So is it possible that I could sing very nicely if I try to sing very nicely? And the answer is, depends on Krishna. He can give such an ability. He may not give such an ability. But it's certainly possible. It depends on Krishna. So what do we do? Well, we depend on Krishna. That's what we do. The interest should be trying to please Krishna, not just I want. I'm at the center and I want, and Krishna is the order supplier, and I go to the door of the big warehouse and say, Krishna, can I have a nice singing voice, please? I know you have that a lot of them in your warehouse. And Krishna says, well, you do these exercises and I'll give you some singing voice. It's not a business deal. Follow up. And this is going to be our last question. Whoops. Two more questions. Okay, on her behalf, you're going to ask.
Is she attending Japa retreat in Houston?
Yeah.
And she's thinking about it, and her question is coming that there is attraction, there is attachment, little bit attachment towards Krishna, and there's more willingness is there,
but
when the time comes to take shelter, it's usually come out of fear or duty because we don't have any other shelter, so better take Krishna's shelter. So how to make a
That's the beginning. That you have to start from wherever you are. It may be out of fear, it may be out of duty. It may not be spontaneous bhakti. But you have to begin wherever you are. And if I understand, a mode of goodness is not out of fear. A mode of goodness, we strive for that. A mode of goodness is, I know it's good for me. Or, I know it will purify me. It's different than duty or fear. I know it will purify, it's a mode of goodness. It will purify my existence. Or similar. These are directly from Bhagavatam, Kapila Dev's instructions to Devahuti. I know that it's something I should do. How do I know? Because scripture says it's something I should do. That's how I know anything. So I should take shelter. Now over here, there's sense of duty and there's fear and there's other things going on. But let me go and cultivate the mode of goodness position. And following that can become the spontaneous position. And it, you know, cultivating takes time. It's not, you know, tomorrow, today I say, Krishna, I want to do this because it will purify me, and, you know, okay, that one's done. It takes time. Character and quality takes time. Last question. Hare Krishna.
This is a left-wing question.
Left-wing question.
Yes, pardon me. As a recommended process to disciples should follow a spiritual master like a shadow. So I've been contemplating on it. One is internal cultivation to follow, and second is also external cultivation. I get the point of internal cultivation, but external cultivation is like how you sit, how you walk. Is this like mandatory or it's an option?
Why do you ask that question?
I made an observation, so I...
Well, cultivation will take you there. And is it optional or mandatory? Cultivation is mandatory. Cultivation, not... But cultivation. Not instantaneous, but cultivation. So let's just take a practical example. Take a practical example. I want to dedicate myself to the founder Acharya of ISKCON. And the founder Acharya of ISKCON says you should take only Krishna Prasadam. So internally, I'm dedicating myself, I'm working on cultivating, dedicating myself to a founder Acharya. But I don't know about taking Krishna Prasadam. That's external.
My meaning of external was walking style, sitting.
Oh, that's totally diverse. There's no injunction about walking style. There is injunction, that the external injunction of taking Krishna Prasadam. The other is, you know, there's nothing about it at all. Walking style. Or sitting style. I mean, other than, you know, don't point your feet towards the deity or something like that. That's an injunction. So when it comes to injunction, then I it's mandatory. And I mean, it may not right away be there, but, you know, I understand it's important that I don't stick my feet towards the deity. So, if I'm like mindless and do that, as soon as I recognize, then I check it. I fold my legs or sit in some other manner that I'm not pointing my feet to the deity. So that's an external. The other is neither here nor there. It's not, there's all kinds of diversity of sitting style, walking style, and speaking style. Totally individual, no problem.
Thank you, okay. Yeah.
Okay, you were right, it was left field. Uh-oh. Okay, last. It's 9 o'clock. 9:01.
Maharaji, you've been speaking about Varnashram a little bit.
Yeah.
During this trip.
Yep.
And this is a parenting question.
Parenting question.
Wondering how I can contribute towards, looking ahead. So we see the generation of devotees that have been raised in Prabhupada's movement from the beginning, you know, now in the workforce and contributing to different ways. And, there are some creative models where they're engaging full-time, their tendencies in Krishna's service. The Amish and the Lutheran, they have a socio-economic model where they,
yes, they do.
Their children. Whereas, you know, I feel like in our case, you know, trying to be very careful parents, trying to our capacity to, do the best, and then looking ahead, it almost seems like a free fall, looking at college or workforce, because, you know, some children might have rabbinical tendencies. And where are those successful models to, fully engage them? So I'm wondering, how can I contribute towards this Varnashrama you know, to make a brighter future for these children who are bringing up.
Nice question. Few things. It's a process. It's not like anybody amongst Prabhupada's, you know, sincere followers has the answer to your question or what does it mean? There are persons who are applying themselves more than others, and applying themselves more over a period of time, especially in consultation and collaboration and with balance, with openness to see, hear, and understand different perspectives. So something that you as a parent could do is specific to Varnashram, and, you know, making the future better is become in a balanced way, not get on this bandwagon or that one, but in a balanced way try to understand the subject from those that are absorbed in the subject. Then another second is everything is there in Prabhupada's books, and with that faith, especially if your receiver is on this topic as you're reading, then things are going to register. That if the radar isn't up, it's not going to register. And you know, it's wary of hasty conclusions, because something that's said over here may not be the same as something said over there and something said over there. And so what's the big picture? But if the radar is up, then, and reading Prabhupada's books with that concern, I want to be a contributor to the progressive social structure to make a better future than today, following the indication of our founder, Chari, with faith in him, and everything is there in his books and his other instructions. That's the second thing. And a third is something that I've already said on Tuesday evening, and that is, at least something I have some conviction in, it really makes sense, that we have to become human before we become civilized humans. And so considering those qualities, of course, now what's the goal? Not just become human. The goal is to become Krishna conscious. The goal is to take full shelter of Krishna. And it's enhanced by being human. Or fuel can ignite better when it's dry than when it's wet. So let me, as a parent, try to understand these human qualities and live by the human qualities, not just make sure that my children do, but live by these human qualities. And that's a step in the direction of, you know, the question you asked. Those are three things that I can suggest. And, you know, in all of them, it's, you know, be patient, because it's not going to manifest anytime soon. It's not even going to be clear what it's going to look like, what to speak of, how to get there. So, over a period of time, those three things, being patient and, you know, being cautious about being impulsive and jumping on this bandwagon, that bandwagon, being, you know, very open to the idea of, I want to be a participant in fulfilling this 50% part of Prabhupada's mission that isn't completed yet. I want to be a participant in that. It's kind of what my position is. I know it's something he wanted. What does it look like? How to get to what it looks like? That's not clear. But there are very thoughtful people that have, from my perspective at least, a balanced perspective on what it takes to get there. It's a lot of work, brahminical work. I mean, I guess it's kind of a fourth thing, but not like in the top three. In Konteya's presentation, towards the end, he was, you know, rah-rah Gurukul. To establish Varnashram, we have to start with our children, rah-rah Gurukul. Now, to get to rah-rah Gurukul manifest, it may take a whole bunch of time. It may take some decades or generations of parents that are doing the Aruta Mataji method, the homeschooling method, that's not Gurukul. But, you know, to just, with the resources that are available to us, to, you know, do a quality thing that's, you know, micro rather than, you know, larger than micro. But with a view to the Gurukul is the model that Prabhupada spoke about. So there's merit there in that end, but persons not qualified have made a mess. And others are trying where it's not the residential, because Gurukul means residential. And even those that are trying the non-residential, it's, you know, it's not just a slope, it's a mountain. You know, from a parent's point of view. For you know, dozens of reasons, you know, many is funding, you know, some children are at this standard and some children are at that standard, some parents are at this standard, so you mix kids together and it comes out, you know, burnt khichdi. I don't want my kid in that school. Etc. 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 It takes refinement of individuals that are capable of delivering what a Gurukul model can deliver. And families that are committed to what the Gurukul can deliver. And they're on board with what it takes as a parent to be supportive of what the Gurukul can deliver. So, you know, being a good homeschooler and consider, you know, thoughtfully rather than quickly, what does it take to get to that Gurukul model? And is it maybe if I can do something that helps us in the next generation get to that Gurukul model, that'll be a nice contribution. And discuss with, you know, wise people like Aruta that says, yeah, and here's some things that we can do today to get there, or others that have that thought process. Not easy. We don't need to repeat mistakes. In moving quickly to fulfill the instruction of our founder Acharya. So patience and working towards goals in ways that with others similarly committed make sense, and we work together towards those goals. It takes time. Gonna end. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.